Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The great David Dusick joins us from Golf Week after the U.S. Open. Real quickly, they're at Carnoustie. Is that correct for the Open?
That is correct. We'll be in Carnoustie, Scotland, 1 month from now for the Open Championship.
So DJ is the favorite. And he's 12-1, he obviously finished third at the Open, two shots behind Koepka. Rory and Spieth have the second best odds at 14-1, followed by Fowler, Justin Thomas, and Justin Rose. They got Brooks Koepka at seventh in terms of, and he's 20-1. Are you surprised after he wins back-to-back U.S. Opens that he still gets no respect?
I'm surprised that Koepka gets that little respect. I'm surprised Patrick Reed, who was solo fourth after shooting 68 yesterday, is not getting obviously a lot of respect with the folks out in Vegas at this point. But, I mean, at the end of the day, the best player right now in my mind has been Dustin Johnson coming into this. Now, he folded yesterday. I was really disappointed to see him go out there and shoot that 70, I thought that he was going to be the guy. But obviously he then had the best seat in the house watching Koepka shoot 68 and just you know, let everything roll off his back, be able to absorb all those early shots from Tommy Fleetwood, who shot an amazing 63 yesterday. Koepka showed poise that was tremendous. And to be able to bring it home, that birdie that he made on 16 to give himself a two-shot lead going to the 17th hole, the 18th hole, obviously, he used one of those shots when he went left on 18 with his approach.
Right.
He played smart the whole week. He putted great. He has, I think, one of the best. He and Dustin Johnson both have the perfect demeanor to handle the U.S. Open, especially one when the USGA botches the course. They take the good with the bad. They just keep plugging along, playing. And, Koepka should get more respect, and honestly, so should Reed.
He, boy, is he ripped, too. I got to tell you, this guy is he's an ox with that golf club.
Like, yoked. Absolutely.
I mean, how far does he hit it?
He when he really lays into a driver, he is just as long as guys like Finau and Dustin Johnson and Rory. I mean, he's easy 315, 320 in the air when he needs it.
Wow. So why is it that am I guessing this, that no one cares about him winning back-to-back U.S. Opens? I think it's phenomenal what he did, but just no one seems to gravitate toward him.
I think that he's got a really quiet demeanor. I think he really doesn't care about the spotlight. The spotlight comes to him because of his game, because of his accomplishments, but he doesn't seek it out. And unfortunately, when we look back on this guy, and you know this, 10 years from now, when people are talking about the 2018 U.S. Open, they're going to talk about two things. They're going to talk about, you know, Phil Mickelson playing hockey on 10 on Saturday, and they're going to talk about the USGA yet again screwing up the course when they promised us they weren't going to let this happen. It happened again, and those are going to be the things that we take away. And that's a pity, because Koepka deserves a lot more kudos and a lot more buzz than he's going to be creating.
What do you mean, like, they promised you that they were going to do what?
3 weeks before the U.S. Open started, they had what's called Media Day. So yours truly got to go out there and play the golf course. But before we did, Mike Davis and other USGA officials literally got up on a stage and on a podium and talked to us and literally said, like, verbatim, Scott, we're not going to have a repeat performance of what we had in 2004. We have learned from that. We have more technology at our disposal to be able to monitor the course and the greens specifically. We have better weather forecasts at our disposal, and we're going to make better decisions. And all of that was said with a straight face in front of us, and for the first couple of days, everything looked great. And then we got to Saturday, and they totally monkeyed it up. And I was following the Koepka Ian Poulter group all day on Saturday.
Right.
And by the time we got out to, like, 11, 12, 13 specifically, the wind is kicking up. The greens are totally baked out and brown. They were put the flags were put in positions where you couldn't go at the flags. And even when you hit a good shot, there was just not enough grass. There wasn't friction on the grass to be able to stop a ball from rolling away
right.
from the pin positions. They screwed it up again.
And who's to blame? And instead of, like, the USGA, like, can you name names? Who's the,
well, I mean, at the
who
end
makes
of the, day,
the call?
The buck stops with Mike Davis. He's the executive director. He's the guy who is going to be at the very top of the masthead when you're looking at where do the holes go? How much irrigation do we put? How do we set up the golf course? The buck stops with him, and he needs to, along with the championship committee, those are the people that need to step up and say, you know what? We got it wrong. And they came into the media center on Saturday night, Scott, and they said as much, which was just dumbfounding. The fact that they come in and said, yeah, you know what? There were holes on the golf course today that went over the top, that went beyond what we think was probably fair. I mean, they came out and admitted again. They screwed it up again.
So what did they why didn't they fix it for Sunday?
Well, I think Sunday was fine. I think Saturday night, because they had eaten so much crow there that they put tons of water down there. They didn't roll the greens nearly as much. They didn't cut them so that the grass could actually do some kind of healing. They put the pin positions in much flatter areas, and that's how a guy like Tommy Fleetwood could go out and shoot 63. It would have been impossible to go out there and shoot that kind of a number. I mean, it was...
You mean on Saturday?
On Saturday. Saturday morning, there was still a little moisture out there. The wind didn't kick up. But, you know, and that's how you got guys like Daniel Berger
right.
to go out there and shoot an early score. But it was totally different golf courses in the afternoon.
What do you think, David Ducey, the great writer from Golf Week and regular on the bench, what do you think of all the people that think the golfers are prima donnas and that they're, literally, that they're crybabies and that they're, they play, 35, 40 tournaments a year where they're stroking 15, 20 under par and still making tons of money. And then they finally run into a behemoth on the U.S. Open every year. And then instead of, there's people that believe instead of conquering it, they complain the whole weekend. And it makes them look like a bunch of crybabies, like, or that they're spoiled brats. I mean, you hear people saying this. I'm not making this up. What do you think of it?
No, I hear it all the time. Absolutely. And my reply is this. There's two things. When you hit a good shot, you should get a reward for that. When you hit a lousy shot, or you hit in a national championship, in the U.S. Open, a shot that's so-so or okay, it should get punished. But I'm out there with Koepka on 15 green on Saturday afternoon. He hits a fantastic bunker shot. The ball rolls up. It's trickling up towards the hole about 2 or 3 feet. It's about to stop. The wind is kicking up, going like basically down the hill from his left to right. The ball then gets caught by the wind, and because there's no green, no grass to actually literally, Scott, create friction with the ground, the wind pushes the ball away another 30 feet. It was ridiculous. The ball should have stopped under any normal circumstances. That shot should have stopped within 5 feet of the cup. Instead, he ends up with a 35 or 40 footer. And the same thing happened to Poulter on the exact same green. I asked him about it. I said, what can you tell me about the condition of 15 green? He said, I literally can't say anything about it because I have nothing to say. It's too messed up.
So,
and I have no problem with them setting up a hard golf course.
Right.
It needs to be a fair golf course.
So explain to me what the hell happened with Phil Mickelson. What was he thinking? And, I don't think people understand actually what happened.
Well, what happened was that Phil Mickelson hit a putt on Saturday afternoon on the 10th green, on the 10th green, right. He hits it. He recognizes the ball is going so fast on the green that it's going to fall and it's going to probably end up about 40 yards down a hill. So rather than letting that happen, he jogs over to it. And while the ball is still rolling, he putts it again, hits it again, intentionally. Now, what the USGA did is go by the exact letter of the rule. And the rule says that if a player hits a moving ball, it's a two-shot penalty. The important thing about this whole thing is the intent, Scott, is not a part of the rule itself. It has nothing to do with it. And so by ignoring the intent, and clearly the intent was to not let the ball go down the hill, then the USGA basically said the rule says it's a two-shot penalty, end of story, period. Now, could they have forced him to get out of the tournament? Could they have kicked him out of the tournament? There is like a never-used rule that does give them the authority to do that. They said that to us when they came in to explain all this on Saturday night. They basically just said, look, it didn't happen. Phil called up the USGA. He spoke to Mike Davis on Saturday afternoon. He said he wanted to talk about it, wanted to make sure that they came out and explained, that the USGA explained that that's the rule. Mickelson was aware of it. He totally accepted the penalty. And the big thing to me was that there really wasn't any sense of contrition. There wasn't the, I'm sorry, I just lost my head, I snapped under the pressure, I screwed up, I definitely deserve the penalty. And you know what? It's something I've always wanted to do. I did it, and it was wrong, and I should just move on from that. We never got anything like that. We got Mickelson basically, I can say, smirking and just going along, but there was no sense that he felt sorry or bad about it. And when he left on Sunday, because he got out super early, he was leaving the facility before the leaders took off.
Right.
He's out there giving thumbs up, cheers to the crowd, happy-go-lucky guys. Like, yep, nothing happened. See you guys at Kerr News Day.
What did you think when you saw him do it? Like, what was the first thought, lastly, that I'll ask you here, that went through your mind when you saw this guy who's like basically a living legend golfer basically running after a putt and stopping a ball that was rolling on the green on 13? When I saw it, I was like, holy shack, what is this guy doing? I've never seen a star player do something like that.
I was on the golf course with Koepka and Poulter. I heard about it. I didn't see it live. I came in. And people had described to me what happened. I saw the video, and I thought it was a joke. I thought it was one of those situations where, like, you're out with your buddies, and you miss a putt in a match, and you just hockey puck the thing back there because you know you just lost the hole and you're going to go on to the next one.
That's what I would do.
Except it's the U.S. Open. It's a film. It's a guy who literally has got five majors and is in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
He's one of the most beloved and respected, you know, guys on the PGA Tour. One of the great players of his generation, screwing up and doing something that is unbelievable. Like, it was stunning, absolutely stunning.
Yeah, and I bet all the rest of the golfers on tour thought it was crazy. They all had to be talking about it later. I got to run, but great stuff as always. Great coverage on Wednesday, Friday, and tonight. Thanks so much as always for your incredible support that you give us and talking about the great game of golf. We always love having you on the bench, David. You're one of our favorites all time. Thanks again.
Anytime, Scotty. Thanks a lot.
We'll talk to you at the Open, which is my favorite championship, the one that really matters, the real golf championship.
You got it.
That's right. The only one that matters, the British Open. That's real golf at its finest. I actually thought Shinnecock was that kind of course, though. Brutal. A Lynx course, basically, right? That was brutal. Absolutely brutal.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.